Podcast where you talk trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Are you there, God? It's me, Matthew.
I'm stuck with
someone
who period movie.
Supposedly is my friend, but really all she keeps talking about is how her boobs are bigger than mine, and it's upsetting me.
It would. I'm known for my naturally large breasts, so...
I mean, they're bigger than mine, so
maybe. No, I'm excited to talk about this because I feel like it's a full circle moment for us, you know, as
well, we started this podcast when we were going
when
through
we were
puberty.
Going through puberty. Yeah, exactly. You get it.
Now we get to talk
about it. It's been a decade. But no, we're talking about Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, which I didn't know this was coming out. I honestly, when you suggested it, thought it was streaming somewhere. And that's why I was delayed in viewing it. I've really only heard like whisperings about it, like Judy Blume, you know, she doesn't have a lot of novels that have been made into films and she's the producer on this and blah, blah, blah. But I couldn't have told you anything about it because I also never read this book.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, well, this is a surprise to nobody, but I also did not read this book growing up. But I will say I am a Judy Blume fan. I definitely read other of her books. Like, she wrote Super Fudge and Tales of Fourth Grade Nothing and that whole series, which I really did enjoy and watched a lot, or not watch, but read them all growing up. I want to say I maybe read some of them a couple of times. But yeah, I hadn't really heard anything about this movie either, aside from that Judy Blume was on a press tour and, you know, for the movie, but she got into sort of like a weird situation regarding J.K. Rowling, where she said something in an interview that was misconstrued, and then there were headlines that were like, Judy Blume thinks that J.K. Rowling is great or whatever, and then Judy Blume had to release a statement that was like, absolutely not. I 100% support trans people. Like, don't get it twisted. That's not what I was saying at all. Like, I don't know why this person misquoted me, but, you know, that's not an issue. And so that, I feel like, was the main story that I saw around this. Yeah, like, I guess I sort of knew that it was coming out because maybe I had gotten some press emails or whatever, but not nearly as much press around this as you might think there would be, given the fact that it is based on, like, a very famous, some would say beloved, some would say controversial, like, children's book.
Yeah, no, I've always known this title. And, like, even, like, I have memories of reading the title in like high school or whatever. Like, it's been in my peripheral. And I didn't know anything about it, but I do wonder if that was an intentional censoring from my household. I don't know. I should ask my parents if they thought it was too edgy for me.
I remember like my parents sort of saying that it was like giving me the sense growing up that this was kind of like a liberal book. And again, I don't know how closely the book ties into the movie because I haven't read the book.
It sounds pretty legit, pretty close.
But it's about a girl who, according to the movie, is growing up in New York. She's like, what, 11, 12?
She's 11 going on 12. Yeah.
Her family moves her to New Jersey. So she's like a little bit more in the suburbs. She's going through a year of school and she meets friends, and it's all sort of about the time in your life where you're starting to go through puberty and sort of figure yourself out. So there's stuff about boobs growing. There's stuff about getting your period. There's stuff about being into boys sort of for the first time. And just sort of sorting through all of those like social mores, but then also the kind of like emotional and physical things that come with it. And yeah, it's, I can see why like my parents or your parents might have shied away from it in some regards, because it is like not Christian and it is sort of like pro,
it's like almost anti-religion.
Yes, it's almost anti-religion, and it's very pro, like sort of pro sexuality in some ways, that I think it's not very like purity culture, I guess.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, it was, I also feel like another reason why I didn't read it was just that it had come out so long ago, because I think it came out in the 70s, and also I was a boy, you know, so
yes, of course.
And as a very straight boy, I really did not like things that were nothing to relate associated to there. With women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Blech, cooties.
Ew, girl. Yeah. I mean, but I love them still at the same time. Very sexually attracted to them.
But I was pleasantly surprised by this film and really actually, like, enraptured by it. I went into it thinking, oh, this will be, like, a feel-good, like, just easy family film. But it was really, like, charming and laugh-out-loud funny. Everyone in it, it stars Rachel McAdams as the mother and then has a slew of, like, new young faces as the various tweens. And also a Safdie brother, which was weird because I was like, I know you, but why?
The Safdie brothers just pop up in random stuff. Yeah. You never know, because one of them was in, one of them was the gay politician in Licorice Pizza, which you didn't watch.
But oh, he just, wow. You know, yeah,
sort of
no.
like came up out of nowhere.
Good for them. But yeah, I was really swept up in it. It gave me, like, it reminded me of the sweet yet smartness of something like Instant Family, but with the coming of age-ness of eighth grade.
Yeah.
Eighth grade is a little more serious and tense, but it had that same sort of like bittersweetness.
Yeah, this movie does, like, a miraculous job, I think, in a lot of different ways. One, by being a movie that's sort of about nothing, but you're very involved the entire time.
Yes.
Like, there's no real plot to it, per se. I mean, there's, like, storylines, like, oh, her relationship with her grandmother. But it's but all very mundane. Like, nothing, like, nobody dies. Yeah. Nobody, you know, gets in a car accident. You know, this isn't, like, Perks of Being a Wallflower or something like that, where there's, like, things going on. But it also manages to be, like, a very sort of fun, easy-to-watch movie, while also tackling, I think, some very big important issues in really smart, sort of kind ways. I was just so impressed over and over and over again. And I think that we all forget that Rachel McAdams has been Oscar nominated and is just an incredible actress. And I thought she was phenomenal in this. And every scene that she has by herself with her daughter is great. 'Cause it's sort of, obviously Margaret is the main character and we're focused on her, but her mother is also a big character in the movie. I don't know if that's the same in the book, but like her, she in New York is an art teacher. When she moves to New Jersey, they decide that she's going to stay home and be a full-time mom. And so she's sort of a little bit wayward because she doesn't know what to do with herself. The things that are the more like stay-at-home mom type activities, she's not really that into. And you sort of see her struggling to figure out where her place is in this new life and how the sort of like traditional view of what a woman should want and enjoy is like not exactly what she is looking for, even though she absolutely adores being a mother to Margaret and, you know, is a very good one, I think, as well.
And it's just her struggle of like you know, what is a family and like what does family mean? Because it turns out like the central tension is that her family has disowned her for marrying a Jewish man. And so she hasn't seen them since, you know, getting married. And now she has an 11-year-old daughter that her parents have never met. And so sort of the climactic choice in the film is when she reaches out to them and they decide to come and visit. And I thought that was interesting too, just like that lostness of these adults around her, but also that continued thrum to like find connection and like what is a valuable relationship, and her kind of dancing through these awkward like take and take relationships with the PTA and these sort of superficial engagements, and her expecting her family to mean something more, but in the end she's like disappointed by them as well. I don't know. It's sort of like that grass half greener sort of midlife crisis idea, but played in a really sympathetic way.
Yeah, I had a lot of feelings, I feel like, about that plot line. like one, because I was watching the movie, but also I'm concurrently reading the book Bad Mormon by Heather Gay, the Real Housewives of
me too.
Salt Lake City housewife, yes, which I told you to read because it's about Mormonism. And while I did not grow up a Mormon, it's really interesting to read that book because it's, you know, sort of about her going through life, this very sort of religious upbringing, and, you know, not really realizing that something was amiss until much later in life. And then, you know, how her family deals with that, how she, you know, sort of navigates that situation with them. And then in this, her Rachel McAdams' parents are very devoutly Christian and sort of disown her when she marries a Jewish person. And I don't know, like, for me, as someone who was super religious and then came out and has, you know, not necessarily a great relationship with my parents, I thought that they did a really like good and sort of truthful job at how you move on from those relationships, but then at the same time how you're kind of stuck with them at the same time. Like you can move on and you can find a new family and, you know, chosen family and lots of great people in your life, but then you always sort of have this like weird situation of like, okay, I'm not talking to these people, but I am like related to them. Yeah. And as much as you want to sort of cut ties with them, there's always some sort of connection. And how do you kind of navigate that? And when do you let them back into your life? And is that a good decision? Is it a healthy decision? Is it something that, you know, I think you always want your parents to be supportive and to change. But it's like that's not always the case for a lot of people. And so do you like keep them at arm's length to kind of protect yourself? Or do you sporadically sort of like try to test the waters again, knowing that you'll probably get hurt? I don't know. It was just, I thought that they did such a good job with it. And then when the parents arrive, they're, I think it would be really easy to either have A, the parents be terrible, or B, the parents be like really great. And the parents are sort of like a slightly better version of what they used to be, but are still not great. And so how then do you move forward if you're Rachel McAdams? And it's like, okay, well, yeah, these people like now aren't disowning me, but they're also not necessarily people that I want to have a good, like a strong relationship with. Like, how do you navigate that?
Yeah, no, I thought it was really interesting. And obviously, like, I was reading about it, and I think this book gets on a lot of, like, banned book lists because of the, like, religious elements. Because the crux of it and why it's called, like, Are You There, God? Is because Margaret is this 11-year-old who's given this, like, research project in school, who her teachers, like, kind of nudge her to think about religion because she has a Jewish father and a Christian mother, and they both decided to forego their religions and kind of tell their daughter, like, hey, you can choose when you're older type thing. And so now that she feels like, you know, she's getting older, she's waiting for her period, she feels like a woman blooming, she's like, maybe now I should be finding my religion. And so she's curious about, like, her grandmother's temple, her friends' different congregations, and it's sort of like her having this continued conversation with God. And it's like a very, very sweet, like, 11-year-old perspective on, like, God and this prayer-based relationship. And, like, most of it comes down to, like, I want my period. I want this boy to like me. Like, why is this so hard? You know, and it's very relatable and sweet. And I think the easy way this ruffles feathers is that in the end, she has this blow up where she's like, this religion only hurts people, because she sees her mother's hurt. She sees her parents fighting about their parents' influence on her religion. And she has this big explosion where she's like, this isn't good. Like, I don't like this. And kind of is like, I don't know if I believe in God. And it was like a big moment in the movie, but I also just like, I don't know. It was curious watching it, especially coming from someone who has been through like a like faith journey and like maybe divorced from religion, and kind of thinking about raising a kid and wondering like how different it'll look to how I was raised. And I thought they handled it so like obviously sweetly and charming and really likable, but also it just felt more, there was more depth to it than I think I expected going into the film.
Yeah, I thought that they did a really good job of also taking a situation that, you know, I mean, is universal, but like is set in the 70s in this book and movie, and it really felt very modern at the same time. And yeah, I was thinking about kind of parenting and how, you know, our parents did it, and I think people in, you know, when we were growing up versus how I would parent, and and I feel like how Rachel McAdams and her husband are doing it in this movie, they're so obviously caring, and but they're also like not pushy with anything, and they sort of let their daughter, you know, make her own decisions and do her own thing. And they're just like very trusting that she is a smart person and can figure things out for themselves. And they're not really trying to helicopter parent them. But that at the same time, she just knows completely that they're there for her whenever they need her. Cause even like at the end, when finally, Margaret does get her period, and you know, she has to sort of call her mom into the bathroom and sort through that situation. It's like, it's, I can imagine that being such an awkward situation in most families and in most girls' sort of upbringing. And it was just so sweet and so like celebratory and trusting. And I just thought, wow, like this is what good parenting looks like, where you're going through something that's so awkward potentially, and yet it's like kind of is but isn't really, just because there's such a good relationship between the parent and the child. I don't know, I was like in awe of it, and I was like, okay, I want to like now have a kid so that I can be as good a parent as Rachel McAdams.
Yeah, it was basically the antithesis of like Lady Bird and her relationship with her mom.
Yes.
And like the tension there, because I do get like really soft around mother-daughter relationship movies now, which is so cliche, and I don't think you need a child, to your point, to appreciate a dynamic there. But it is weird to like watch it thinking not of myself but of my daughter, and like being like, huh, like how will this happen? And there is just like the thing that struck me about this movie, and the only word that really like comes to mind, is like how charming it is. And I think like part of that is wrapped up in this 1970s vibe, you know, it's very, I don't know, earth tones, and they're running through sprinklers, and they're
it's
going
very
to
like
malls.
Americana.
And it's like there's this nostalgia factor to it, and I was like, man, I don't know what kids are doing these days, you know. But I also liked that it did feel so true still, because it was like these girls are dressed like they're freaking middle-aged moms, you know. They're wearing their little, like, I don't know, like, everyone's just styled up. Like, I feel like we forget that that's always the trend, is like young girls are always dressing like their moms or adults around them, because that's like what they see and adapt to. And I felt like there was so much that felt constant through this period piece, and yet into my childhood, and then now thinking of my daughters, and like just the fact that, yeah, it's just these relationships that are the through line, really. And I think that's what this movie captured in a really nice way. And it honestly reminded me of Rachel McAdams' other tour de force, About Time, which has a similar, like, just feel good, surprisingly thoughtful energy to it. And it felt like it captured that same sort of essence that we don't always get in movies these days.
I feel like Rachel McAdams is such an underrated actress. Like, she has, honestly, she would be sort of an interesting person, I feel like, to do a birthday episode on in some regards. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, she's been in so many things of so many different varieties, but like, and she's always great in everything.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, she's, yeah, I feel like not fully, like, appreciated for all of the stuff that she can do. It's like, I think she's the best part, or one of the best parts, like, in The Family Stone. She's so good in Eurovision. She's great in Game Night. Like, obviously, she's in Spotlight.
Have you seen About Time, though?
So, fun fact about About Time. Have I watched it? Not the whole thing. When I was doing an article ranking Margot Robbie performances, I watched just the clips that Margot Robbie is in, but I haven't seen the full movie.
I do remember that. Oh, that's hilarious. Well, it's a beautiful film. Really good. Love it. She's good in it, too. But yeah, no. I agree about her.
I think we need to talk about, also, is Kathy Bates. Who is also incredible in everything, but we know that because it's Kathy Bates. But she plays the grandmother, not Rachel McAdams' mom, but Ben Safdie's mom, the Jewish grandmother. And is just, I related to her so much because she's just like the epitome of a New York grandmother. And I really hope that at some point in my life, I will get to be like, you know, somebody's like gay uncle or something, and like have some like malleable 12-year-old come and visit me in New York, and we'll go see you know, the Rockettes and whatnot. Like, send Penny to come visit, and I will show her around. But she's obviously devastated when the family decides to move to New Jersey, which is the correct reaction to have. And then she's always calling. She doesn't really want to talk to Rachel McAdams. She just wants to talk to Margaret. She invites Margaret into the city. They have like a lovely time. They're laughing together. It just seems like such an ideal like grandmother granddaughter relationship, even though there's like prickliness with the parents. There's like never that with Margaret. And she wants Margaret to come down to Florida and visit her down there, which I was like, that sounds like such a fun vacation. Like, if your grandparent was like, hey, come down to Florida, we're gonna spend a week together, I'm gonna spoil you rotten, like, we'll go to the pool and stuff. Oh my gosh, better. And really, it was sort of cruel of Rachel McAdams to then revoke that and instead make Margaret stay home and spend time with Rachel McAdams' horrible parents. Like, I was like, Margaret can have as many temper tantrums as she wants about this, because this is not the right move.
Yeah. There were so many little details that I liked, because I liked that her husband at the time was so furious with her, but as soon as, like, Margaret came into the picture, they were, like, on the same team, and he was, like, really supportive of her with her, with telling his mom. And I liked that. He wasn't really, like, a main character, you know what, who needs him, But I liked that when he was in the picture, he wasn't like some doofus, you know, like kind of cliche father slash partner. He was like really enmeshed in that dynamic. And similar to the grandma, I thought they were also layered and interesting, that it was something that you could see yourself like watching and appreciating new things after. Because it didn't, like, I don't know, it wasn't cliche. Like, all these characters felt, like, really rich and interesting on their own. And it wasn't too overburdened with, like, their stories. But even the grandmother, like, having to face the fact that she was lonely. And so she did kind of have to, like, pick up and kind of move to Florida or, like, go to find a partner or something. I don't know.
She was sort of like a snowbird.
Yeah.
Dynamic. And, she was, and like, I just thought it was like retirement home.
Yeah. It was. It just seemed nice that they were all allowed to have these separate lives, but also felt so real and interactive with each other.
Well, and like Margaret's friend, who
let's talk about it.
Is like a little bit of a bitch, but also
you
like,
probably loved her.
Well, no, I didn't like her that much because, I mean, I feel like Margaret, everybody in this is so likable. The friend is kind of, like, the friend is richer. The friend is a little, like, stuck up and hoity-toity. But at the same time, like, welcomes Margaret into their friend group right away. And they're, like, a little bit mean girly, but, like, not really. And the other two friends are also sort of lovely. And so, at a certain point, you, it's like you realize that she's not necessarily a great friend to Margaret and that there are some issues there, but it's also not like, oh, and this person's terrible and we're dumping her. Like, you get to the end of the story and Margaret is like sort of moving on with different friends, but they never really have a falling out, and you kind of get the sense that, oh, well, like maybe they're still, like, they could still sort of be friends, too, and maybe the other girl will kind of have some maturing to do. It's just, like, they picked every relationship and every circumstance that happens in this feels very realistic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure, because I...
And in a way that's not, like, plot...
Yeah.
It's not plotty. It's very realistic. And I think the realism makes up for the fact that it doesn't really have very much plot to it, because you're like, wow, like this is so accurate, and we don't normally get to see this kind of relationship on screen, because usually either the girl's a mean girl or she's a really nice friend. And in this way, you kind of get these characters that are a mix in a way that's really realistic. Mm-hmm. Like, if you moved to town and this girl was like, hey, do you want to be my friend, and she was kind of cool, you'd be like, sure, yeah, great, and you would spend time with her, and then maybe at a certain point realize, like, you know what, like, she's great in some ways but maybe not great in other ways, and sort of have to figure out how to process that without it being like, and I realize you're the devil.
Yeah, exactly, because I do feel like there's a tendency to be like more of a PSA or kind of cliche and give you that black and white, like good and bad, like something to overcome and vanquish even. But it is just like, even when this other friend, I don't remember her name, Nancy or something, was like, she's the worst in the movie, but you're also like, she's just a kid too, and you can like, there's an interesting tension there where she is like a good friend, but she's also a jealous friend who always needs to be the center of attention and like completely puffs herself up and is like, I have bigger boobs than all of you losers. And like, and eventually lies about getting her period because she was jealous another girl got it first. And it was all just so like straight out of Shelby Boyer's Diary. I was like, I feel so like exposed right now. And I think that's interesting because I feel like a lot of coming of age movies either tend to be like kind of the raunchy comedies or like, you know, high school comedies or something like The Good Boys or whatever, where it talks about things like, oh, your first beer or your spin the bottle games, but it's all like over the top and done for laughs. Or you have something like really dark and heavy and sad and serious, like Eighth Grade or, you know, something truly depressing. And I liked that this was like, it wasn't the Babysitter's Club, but it also wasn't like 13 Reasons Why, you know?
Yes. Oh,
there was a nice middle there.
Also, I'm just looking this up. Did you realize that the girl who plays Margaret was in the Ant-Man movies? That she's the daughter?
Oh, okay. That does make sense.
Because I'm like, I've seen both of those, and I did not recognize this girl at all.
I mean, to be fair, she was like 4 years younger.
That's true.
And you do grow a lot in those 4 years. And I thought she was really good in this. I thought she was really charming.
Can we talk about the tall girl in the class?
Oh, yeah. I was trying to Google her age. I was like, yes, did they cast a 26-year-old? And I was
like, this woman is fully like 25 years old. Like, she doesn't look like, oh, a girl who like developed quickly. Yeah. It was like, this person is not like even in high school, let alone
I couldn't supposedly find her birthday, 12
though. Years old or however she is.
I couldn't find her birthday. I can't verify.
Could you find her name?
Yeah, it was like Isol or she was, yeah, I found her IMDb page, but there's not much on it. So she could still be pretty young. I don't know. But yeah, it was funny because she's meant to be this like outcast because, newsflash, girls who mature early are seen as pariahs, whereas boys who mature early are like seen as the best. So that's a little pop psych for you this Thursday. And it really messed me up because I was an early bloomer.
I mean, so was I, but I didn't early bloom in the right way either. So it was not
it wasn't a macho moment for you. You didn't feel like the king of the class.
Well, it was like I was sort of heavy too, so so it wasn't like he's tall and skinny or tall and whatever. Like whenever the growth spurt hit, it did not hit me in a way that was like, oh, I slimmed out or whatever. I just sort of got bigger in all directions, and then also, you know, like sweatier and had pimples or whatever.
They're like, that guy needs to be on football.
And I was just all, like, honestly, if I had been good at sports, I probably would, like, if I had been at all athletically coordinated, I probably would have really excelled in sports because I lost my first teeth when I was, like, 3. Like, I was just very fast in growing up. And I've probably been the same, roughly like the same size and height since like 8th grade. So like it hit early and it hit hard.
Yeah.
But not like an acute hot.
Yeah. Didn't do you any favors. I'm sorry about that.
Yeah. I mean, did you ever
did you ever get to play Spin the Bottle or 2 minutes in heaven?
Because I was grew up in such like a Christian situation.
I know.
I never played any sort of Spin the Bottle or anything like that. Honestly, I don't think I've ever played Spin the Bottle like in my entire life.
Next birthday, you got to set like that up.
I know. Like, not even once I got older did I play it, because I feel like I was probably in the like place where I would have been excited to play Spin the Bottle, everyone else had been playing it for 35 years.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So it's like, you know, they're like, yeah, we're not doing this. We're married. So yeah, no, I didn't get to play Spin the Bottle. I feel like my puberty was, or my sort of growing up was mostly concerned with the fact that I was into various boys and trying to figure out how to avoid that and skirt around that. And so
yes.
I was really like not trying to touch the conversation of puberty or sex or anything like that with a 10-foot pole, and was trying to give off a lot of energy of like, nope, still not interested. Not really into that right now.
Yeah. I did also like the mean girl's relationship with her brother, where she just would yell at him, or like he'd bother her or burst into the room and make fun of her. That was also very funny and charming to me. And I just feel like I would take a spinoff on almost any of these characters and be happy with it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. I would, yeah, I would take something on just about anybody. Like, the teacher I thought was kind of interesting, the other friends,
yeah.
Maybe not the PTA mom, but...
But even her, she probably contains layers, you know? What made her the way she is? I don't know.
That is true. I love the scene at the end where she's like, oh, Rachel McAdams, like, you should sign up for these various things. And Rachel was like, you know, I would, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
And it's like, good Very for you. Relatable. Boundaries.
Yeah. I was curious.
Are you
going to
be a PTA mom?
Oh my gosh. I do not think so. I feel like if I was the PTA mom and they were like, we're going to cut out 5,000 stars for the ceiling, I'd be like, no, we're not. And if I was Rachel McAdams, I'd be like, well, I'm an artist, so I'll just paint the stars. And I'd rather do that, you know. So I feel like I'm too smart for PTA. You know, I don't care. I'm like, just get it done, you know.
Well, I was also like, this is the worst, like, decorating idea ever.
Yeah, it was
to paint the entire gymnasium ceiling black and then put up, like, thousands of these blue felt stars.
Yeah, it was a bad idea from the start. I really thought that was going to come back around in a different way, but I also kind of liked that it was just like, isn't it too bad that didn't work out?
It was giving, like, growing up when you would get those neon, like, glow-in-the-dark yes. stars and glue them to your ceiling.
Of course.
And then 100% one would, like, fall off in the middle of the night and hit you and send you into, like, a panic attack because you thought that you were being, like, murdered.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, like, that just reminded me of her crush, which I also thought was really cute.
Oh, yeah. And it felt very, again, realistic of, like, okay, it's her friend's brother's friend who, like, mows their lawn. Like, nothing really ever happens with yeah. it. It's just a lot of, like, sort of longing and casually chit-chatting. And the parents obviously know that it's happening and are like, hey, you want to go give him the money? And she's like, sure.
That's so cute.
But, yeah, just chef's kiss all the
way
around.
I know. Do you think this will cross the $1 billion mark worldwide? Or
oh, I would say for sure. This and... No, this movie has done terribly.
No, it's done really bad.
In the box office.
Yeah. It's pretty sad. I mean, Super Mario Bros., I still haven't seen it, but it's still doing number one, like, across the board, which is honestly shocking to me. Like, who else needs to see this? I don't know.
Well, the thing with Super Mario Bros. Is, like, it's making tons of money internationally, too, which...
Yeah.
And that's a movie that, like, kids would go see over and over again. I mean, not that this one you
but
wouldn't
it's still,
necessarily
Super
go see,
Mario
but
Bros. Is still different. Number one on domestic, like, in the U.S.
Right.
But anyways, I'm the also, point is that this is doing
but
badly.
But I'm like, what
yeah.
has been, like, what has been released that's competing against that?
Well, How to Blow Up a Pipeline is now out of my theater, so... conspiracy. But this is a good choice, too. I think people should see it. I think, you know, it's doing low. It's getting, like, it got, like, a $2 million weekend, I think, which is pretty abysmal.
Yeah, it says it's only made $7.3 million at the box yeah. office versus a $30 million budget. But yeah. I will say this feels like, I mean, it has a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes.
I know.
And this feels exactly like the type of movie that would do really well on, like, streaming.
Yes.
And on an airplane and in that kind of setting. Because I do feel like kids' movies are, like, I thought this movie was really good, but the audience for this movie is slightly nebulous to me because yeah. it's like the people who read the book growing up, who, like, know the book from when the book was popular, are now, like, middle-aged to old. So, like, they might go see it out of nostalgia, but, like, they're not necessarily relating to the plot of a girl in puberty now like they were when they grew up. And yeah. I don't know how many people are reading this book now who are, like, 10, 11, 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
And then also, like, it feels like a movie that you're probably not going to take a boy to, that you're probably not, like, dads aren't going to. You know, you're sort of, like...
They should.
I mean, they should, yes.
But yeah.
But I think, like, you're kind of looking at, like, 50% of the market is already gone, because I don't think you're going to get that many men who are going to go see this. And then for girls, like, I think it is a really important story, and it is really well done. But if you're, like, a 7-year-old, you might not take them to this. By the time they get to be 18, they're probably not going to go see this. Like, I think it's a weird, like, very small window. And it doesn't necessarily have a sell of being a lot of fun either. Like, if my mom was like, hey, do you want to go to watch a movie about getting your period with me this weekend?
And I was fighting about religion.
Girl, yeah. I would probably be like, I'm not necessarily in a hurry to get there. But I think once it comes out on streaming platforms and there's not that barrier and it's kind of like, oh, yeah, I can watch this or not watch it or whatever, and oh, it's gotten great reviews and I've heard nothing but good things about it, that it's something that might get kind of snatched up.
Yeah. And it's from the director of The Spectacular Now, which is another, well, it was a YA novel that was adapted and did very, very well with critics, but just kind of fizzled at the box office, but has since remained sort of a calling card for good YA adaptions. And starred Shailene Woodley, so congrats to her. And I feel like I admire this director. Oh, you mean
The Edge of 17? Starring Hailee Steinfeld.
No, she did The Spectacular Now, I thought.
I'm on her Wikipedia page.
Oh,
right now.
No. It says,
and it says The Edge of 17, but those two movies, neither of which I've seen, are the same movie.
Yeah. And The Edge of 17 was also a good movie that did not do well financially, but was beloved by critics. So the point still stands.
Let's see who did Edge of 17.
Is it a... Wait, I thought you
Roman
just
Polanski.
Said...
Oh, Roman Polanski. Oh, no. No, I mean Spectacular Now. Sorry.
Okay.
Spectacular
point being...
Now. Spectacular Now, yes, is Shailene Woodley. That was directed by a man.
Ugh. Well, to be fair, it's mainly about a
to be fair, I hated
teen
it,
boy.
Actually. no, it was yes, good. It's written by two men and directed by a man. The man who directed that did The Circle, which I think is the Emma Watson movie.
Yeah, very bad.
Interesting.
So this director is doing better for himself. Two for two.
Summering? Wait, what?
I appreciate this director more, I guess. You know, Two for Two, Edge of 17, and Are You There, God? Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
I think they might have done something. They might have done another movie. Let's go to the filmography section.
I really think this is it.
Yes, those are the only two movies they directed. They also were a writer on Bumblebee, the Transformers movie with Hailee Steinfeld. And a movie called Postgrad in 2009, starring Alexis Bledel.
That was bad. You know what? I have to add that to my movie list. I don't think that's on
They also she also wrote a movie that was directed by Demi Moore.
Oh, wow.
Oh, this is a short film that stars Brittany Snow and Rumor Willis called Streak. Interesting.
Doesn't sound good.
She has another movie that she directed coming out shortly called Shelby. Yes. She is adapting the book Wild Game, My Mother, Her Lover, and Me. This is that deranged memoir that I read for my book club that I told you about the woman who was using her daughter to help her have an affair with her husband's best friend.
What?
It was like,
and this is not ringing any bells. I believe
it
but
it was a wild, it was a terribly written book, but it was very interesting. So like this, it's about,
I can't get into this.
The daughter's the writer, and she's telling a story about her mom who wanted to have an affair with her dad's best friend. It was like her mom and dad were like a couple with this other couple, or, you know, like, were friends. Mm-hmm, and she wanted to have a relationship with the other guy. And so she would do things like, oh, like me and my, like me and the daughter are going to go for a walk. Mm. And then they would go and like meet up at a shed where the other guy would be. And the daughter would have to sort of like wait outside and like keep watch while they were hooking up in the shed. And this went on for years. And then the crazier plot line is that both of these families went on a vacation together at one point so that the mom could be hooking up with the other guy. And the girl fell in love with the son of the other couple. So then they got married, even though their parents were having this weird affair. And then obviously that marriage was a disaster. And so they broke up too. Like, it wild.
Perfect.
It was a deranged book, and I am thrilled that it is being adapted by this woman. Wow.
I am too.
I've never been so excited.
Anything for them, honestly. Yeah, no, I mean, what better story to pivot to after the prepubescent masterclass that is Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret.
It is sort of about a girl. Like, I don't see any, you know, casting information or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like that you probably could have the girl from this movie playing the young version of the author. And I think that I think she'd be a good job at it.
Perfect.
Maybe Rachel McAdams could play the crazy mom.
Oh, my gosh.
This role is like, the mother is like, could get Oscar nominated. You know, like, she's that deranged. I feel like that if Rachel McAdams did a good transformative performance, I'd do it.
Well, I look forward to that. Rachel McAdams starring.
Yeah, you heard it here first, folks. And then Kathy Bates could play the old version of Rachel McAdams once they're like sort of grown up.
Perfect.
Okay, wow. I'm on
things to look forward to.
Things to look forward to. Speaking of things to look forward to, well, I guess you have anything else to talk about with Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Or should we wrap up?
I mean, I guess I would say, you know, support indie films.
Support indie films and support the writer's strike. You can, which I'm not exactly sure how, but, you know.
Yeah. I don't think there's much to. I don't know. I think supposedly you're supposed to cancel Netflix, but I don't know if that's been verified.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that seems slightly dubious to me, but we'll be back next week. Although the writer's strike is here, it shouldn't impact what we are covering for quite some time because there's plenty of stuff in the can before.
Exactly.
It gets to that. Next week is the...
Oh, wait. It's Guardians, right?
It's Guardians of the Galaxy. Yes.
Oh, perfect. Okay. And I owe a birthday episode at some point. I need to think about who to do.
Maybe Rachel McAdams. Rachel McAdams. I was looking at her filmography. There's also a bunch of stuff I've never heard of.
Oh, yeah. She's prolific. Okay?
I have seen Aloha, though, so...
Yeah,
Her most important work. So true. She's in that. She's also in that Woody Allen movie.
Nobody's perfect.
Binge. Nobody's perfect, but I'm gonna work it. Okay, yes. Next week we'll be doing Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which I need to figure out when I'm gonna go see this weekend. I also have to cover the MTV Movie Awards for work.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, I'm not going to them. I just have to watch them and like maybe write some articles. And I was like, can anyone tell me one thing that has happened at this award show in the past 20 years? Like, I defy you. But
sounds fun.
My exciting weekend, MTV Movie Awards and Guardians of the Galaxy Trace.
Only good things happening for you.
Only good things. Only good things. Okay. Well, this was great, Shelby. Maybe we'll have a pop culture roundup next week. Maybe we won't. You know, it's very
actually, I don't think we will because it's my birthday. So
Okay, never mind. We will not.
We'll see. Maybe we'll work something out. But happy birthday to me.
Shelby is.
I'm going on a strike.
The writer's strike is impacting us now.
Yeah,
we are going on a strike from this podcast. Notes required.
Yeah.
Yeah, writing that copy is hard work.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll see you guys next week. Thanks for listening. Go pray to whichever god or group of gods you believe in and ask for bigger boobs.
Yeah.
Bye.
We must adjust this bust.
Oh, yeah. What was
must,
that?
We must increase the bust.
We must increase our bust. Is that what it is?
That sounds right.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what? We'll end with those wise words.